really appreciate you tuning in or stay tuned in to the Internet Advisor Show. We're going to be here for an hour. My name is Gary Baker. Foster Brown has the day off, but I'm here with Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Bill Carver's joined us to help answer your questions. Let me give you the telephone number because this is your hour. It's 800-859-0WJR. That's 800-859-0957. Well, again, thank you for joining us on the Internet Advisor Show. We have a whole hour here to answer your questions. So if you want to give us a call, you heard the number. It's 800-859-0WJR. I got to get that 800 in there, right? People need to know it's on us, our dime.
Exactly.
All right.
1-800-859-0957.
You know that by heart. I have to read it off the little sign.
I practice
here
once or twice, yeah, but I just don't know where.
This is the only thing Cal remembers, though.
That's right. Not the only thing. Hey, I had a great experience today, and that was at the Maker Faire at the Henry Ford. It's today and tomorrow.
Please tell us what a Maker Faire is.
A Maker Faire. I am going to bring on Mike Brennan. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Thanks, and I am at the Maker Faire at Henry Ford, and I guess I can kind of explain it since I walked around. It's a whole potpourri of things. On my right, there's a site that called Roblox, where young people can design games in the cloud. And to my left, there's a guy doing drafting stuff. We're making parts and things. And there's everything in between, including a lot of arts and crafts kinds of things. But there's 400 booths here. They're expecting 30,000 people on the weekend. And I'll bet at least 20,000 went through because Gary was here this morning. And it was wall to wall, wasn't it, Gary?
It was amazing. All of the very – if you took and could somehow – harness all the creativity inside the Henry Ford and outside, out back. They had tents and tents and tents of different people and building stuff, not just arts and craft like you would. And there were some of that, right? Creative people doing lots of creative things, but they were actually making things. And that's what the Fair is all about. Tech Shop had a great big exhibit there. And we've had Mark Hatch, the president of Tech Shop, on the show a couple times. But there were all sorts of other people making jetpacks that you could rocket into the sky with and making little mobile devices. I even saw a mobile sofa chair. So a guy in a red sofa chair was running around, driving it by himself. So it was everything in between.
Yeah, and then for those that couldn't make it today, it's available again on Sunday from 9 to 6. I would encourage you, it's I think $28 to get in, but it's well worth the price. It's fascinating. I mean, it's just, you can't believe what some of the stuff they're making.
I was talking to a woman that was managing the Model T teardown. And while there's about 7,000 actual parts in the Model T, which is amazing because there's only about 15,000 to 16,000 parts in a modern vehicle average, but about 7,000 parts, they had 215 parts that they took off an old Model T and then invited people to grab a part and put it back on. And it was amazing. So people were in small teams and individually helping assemble a Model T there and all sorts of other things. It was pretty amazing. All the big clubs were there. U of M, Dearborn, their computer science group, as well as some of their engineering classes were participating, and many others. So the Society for Women Engineers had kind of a great little bridge building exercise. So people were sitting down building bridges out of straws. Kind of fun to see.
Well, I think it really plays to Michigan's strengths. We have a lot of really serious engineering talent in the state. We have people who have been assembling vehicles for more than 100 years. Some of them are third generation. And then we've just got a lot of creativity. So I think this is really reflective of what's going on in the state these days.
Yep. So you could go there again tomorrow, 9:30 to 6 o'clock at the Henry Ford. And this was one of the things that you wrote about in mytechnews.com, your newsletter that we talk about each week, and you put on some really great things. So if people hadn't heard about it till now, they missed one day, but they can go to the next day. But if they had gotten your newsletter, they would have known about it earlier in the week, right?
Yes, and a number of people came by and said they read the newsletter, they listen to your show, they listen to the podcast, so I was really encouraged by that.
Yeah, we actually found somebody who said, I can't believe I'm meeting one of you guys. We listen to you every week, so that was kind of cool. And I had Charles Kelly, which was a professor. He was a professor at U of M Dearborn in computer science, stopped by and said, yeah, I listen to your show. You actually, you know, talk about good stuff. So I said, great, you're a professional, then we're on the weekend. So it was nice to hear that. Tell us a little bit about MyTech News and what you do there and what it's all about, because in addition to this list last week, you also talked about driverless cars, M-City, which is U of M's activity. What else?
Well, gosh, you know, we cover all sorts of things. We cover life sciences. We cover software. We cover, well, not all. We cover the maker movement. We just started a brand new section in that area. We cover events for entrepreneurs. We cover Michigan entrepreneurs. We write stories about them. We cover state national politics through our partnership with Gunware, alternative energy, cybersecurity. It seems like anything that's hot in the state, we try to cover. And then we have all these content partners like yourself that we feature. We have 8 content partners right now, so we pick up coverage from them. We try to make it a one-stop place for everyone. And we have the newsletter that comes out on Friday that's the compilation of everything.
So that's MyTechNews, MyTechNews.com. And it's free, right? All people have to do is sign up.
That's all they have to do.
Make, thanks a lot. Enjoy the rest of the show today. And tomorrow I'll be back out there about 9:30 or so to spell you, let you walk around a little bit. So I'm looking forward to being back out there at the Maker Faire again tomorrow. You take care, Mike. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and answer your questions again at 800-859-0WJR. Well, Foster has the day off, but Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Bill Carver are here to answer your questions. And this is a great time. We've got another 45 minutes or so to answer your questions, 40 minutes to answer your questions. All you have to do is give us a call. Cheapest way to get a technology question of any kind answered. We don't charge a thing. You just call us up, and we'll let you ask the question. We'll probably ask you a few questions to make sure that we've understand it correctly. And then our job is to try to figure out how to help you and then help a lot of other people. Because when you ask a question, typically other people are sitting there going, oh, I wish somebody would ask this. Yeah, I've had this problem for a while. Sometimes you'll help us answer a lot of questions for a lot of other people.
Well, you know, Gary, since you're offering this free advice, this invaluable amount, this virtual cornucopia of knowledge, you should at least give them a phone number to call.
800-859-0WJR. That's 800-859-0957. So give us a call. Right now, we're going to Russ. Russ, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for calling us.
I have a couple of, you say again.
Thank you for calling us. We really appreciate it.
Okay. I've got questions on this up-and-coming Windows 10 that's coming out. And if I install it, and then I install it to roll back to Windows 8.1, how many times can I do this?
Well, that's a great question, because once you install Windows 10, you have 30 days in which to back out. After 30 days, Microsoft will delete automatically the Windows.old information of your previous Windows experience. And that is a great question. How many times will they allow you to do that?
Well, could you get a little crafty and go in and rename the Windows.old to Windows.something else, and then they can't roll it back?
Well, but that's not what the user's question is. He was wondering how many times
can he go back and forth?
Yeah.
As many times, I think, as you can reload your backup.
I think he
can. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, maybe you could do it that way.
Okay.
So your concern might be, Russ, that you load it, you're not sure you like it, and you want to roll back, but then... Yeah. You know, maybe another. So it's free for the first year, Windows 10 is. So you'd have a whole year to kind of go back and forth. Could you roll back to Windows 8.1 before the end of the 30 days? Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to get rid of everything in 8.1 that you don't need in Windows 10, which is a great thing. They help you clean it up, and they do that automatically.
Yeah, and Microsoft had a lot of, yes, and they would like everyone to go to Windows 10 because it offers so many things, and it's and because there was such a backlash with Windows 8 and not having a start menu, and Microsoft offered sort of a start menu, Windows 10 will definitely
we'll give it back to you.
A start menu with the tiles, and Microsoft wants to forget about Windows 8.
Right.
You know, they're hoping that the same thing is true that every other generation of Microsoft Windows seems to do well. You had Windows 98 that did great. Windows 2000 did good. Windows XP did good.
There was one in between each of those that didn't.
Did not, right. Windows Me.
Yeah, Windows Mistaken Edition.
Visa.
Yep. Vista. Windows Vista.
Yep.
Right.
Okay, I got a couple other kind of connected with that.
So, Russ, though, to answer your question, because I think you ask a really good one that other people are maybe thinking that they should ask the same one, which is, you can roll it back within 30 days before they take that off of your computer. I'm guessing then you can turn around and ask for it again.
You could probably do it
12 times.
I'm thinking you could probably do it 365 times.
Yeah, if you have that time.
If you have that much time. Yep. Anyways, what were your other questions, your comments?
Okay, when it downloads, I have a recovery partition on my computer. Mm-hmm. It's got 8.1 on it. Does that install Windows 10 into that partition?
Not that I know of. I think Windows 10, you know, the recovery partition is probably going to be what it always has been. The latest versions of Windows that I've installed on my PC, if I need to reinstall it, I've usually put the recovery onto a USB drive or USB disk somewhere.
Yeah, you know, I never did get a clear answer on that, Bill, because that was one of my questions that I asked a Microsoft rep that I visited a month ago, and he wasn't even really sure. It would be nice if Microsoft did that, but you have to remember that recovery partition is put on there by the vendor, usually of the computer that you installed, so that, of course, you want to restore it back to that original
generally
OEM.
Generally speaking, isn't that recovery partition read-only? You really can't write to it anyway?
Well, you can, but wouldn't it be nice if Microsoft could update that so if you could recover to Windows 10? But I don't think so, no.
So that begs another question for Russ, which is if you have a recovery partition, you could recover back to 8 after the 30 days time period.
Mm-hmm.
You also would then probably have a recovery partition or have another VM maybe with Windows 10, could you flip back and forth? Could he take and do that? What if we have a virtual machine where we have another operating system? Wouldn't touch that.
Well, I guess the other question is, will Microsoft be doing it the same way that Apple does? See, with Apple, when you load their operating system, they don't ask you to register or do anything in particular that ties that to that particular machine. So the question is, will Microsoft be tying you to that machine based on the IP or the MAC address? Or is it just an open license that you own and you can put it on anything?
Well, it's free, so you would think you could put it on anything you would like.
Is it really free?
Well,
you have to own a Microsoft product to get it.
Well, yeah, one thing that is not clear is that are they going to provide you a product key after the installation that proves that you downloaded that you're a legitimate owner of a free version of Windows 10.
Yeah, there is a product key in it now, although everybody has the same one if they have the preview, but the product key thing is still in there somewhere.
Yeah, so I'm assuming, we could draw a lot of conclusions from that. So after the first year, we can draw that you can download Windows 10, use your existing product key, because they were provided during the free period, and then you can reinstall the operating
system. Maybe if we're lucky enough, we could probably draw a Microsoft representative in, and they can answer those questions.
I think we have one coming up soon.
But it's going to take, you know, take some time to get that information.
We've actually asked for them to come in, and they won't come in until after 10 is released.
Then we'll wait.
Russ, did you have something else? I'm sorry.
Yes, I did. Yeah, one thing. Sure. Can I make it? I heard something a while back in your show about making an ISO image or something of it when it downloads Windows 10. Is that something you could make and then reload at any time you want to?
Well, if they do it the same way that Apple did, with Apple, you would say, yes, I want to upgrade to the next operating system. And they would virtually load the entire operating system, download it onto your machine as an executable or as a disk image. If you stopped the process at the right time, you could copy the disk image, put it onto a separate piece of media, and then if you had to reload, you could reload it back with that image.
I think Paul Throttle answered this in one of his newsletters not too long ago for Windows Secrets, and I believe he said, how do I make, the question was, can I make an image of my of Windows, exactly what Russ is asking, and I believe the answer is pretty much yes. Just like you're describing, Cal, you should be able to offload the image onto an external media, and then how do you make it bootable?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure we'll have more details of that after the release. There's just a lot of speculation right now on how Microsoft's going to be delivering it and in what form it's going to be taking.
It's real early in the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you can be sure that you'll find out here on the Internet Advisor as soon as we know.
Just trying to get a little ahead of the game on that.
So let me ask Russ, have you registered then to...
Not yet. I got to do it yet.
Okay, so we have a little bit of time, and we're all wondering exactly how that's going to work. I think Windows 10, we've all played with it enough to know that that's going to be a really fine operating system. What we're not sure of is how can they possibly download as many people that have registered when it all comes out on the 29th of July here in the next few days. How are they going to actually get that to us over the next... It's got to be over the next few days to a week.
Now, mind you, I will agree that Windows is much, much bigger than Mac. But, you know, Apple was able to do it with a lot of its installed base that way. So as long as Microsoft has plenty of servers available and the bandwidth's out there, I think it should be easy to do.
Hey, Russ, thank you for calling us.
Okay,
great questions.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank
great
you.
Questions.
Bye.
Bye now. Okay, stay tuned. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and answer your questions if you give us a call, 800-859-0957. Well, this is the Internet Advisor Show. Thanks for listening to us on a bright and sunny Saturday afternoon, if you're hearing us then. And if you're one of our affiliates hearing us at a different time or our podcast, that's a weather report in reverse.
Well, the good thing about it, if you're listening to a podcast or on one of the affiliates, all you have to do is close your eyes and you see that
just
sunny
imagine.
Sky. Yes.
I'm still doing that from a trip up north in the North Channel, which is above Manitoulin Island, which is above Lake Huron. A beautiful, beautiful area to go cruising in, and especially sailing and all of the rock formations. We were going past a rock. I could have reached out and touched it. It had been exposed. It was just barely underwater because water's up now. But we knew where it was because of the charts. We were within 10 feet in about 120 feet of water and 10 feet away from this rock that was at the surface.
So
amazing place.
And the rocks up there are the size of houses. You were up by Sheboygan and that area up over there, right?
No, I was way up in the North Channel.
Oh, the North Channel.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe next year we should send you up there with a webcam.
Maybe I can show photos. I'll show that at the next break for all of you. Anyway, let's get
it. Look at the mic real close.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'll hold it up to the radio. We have a little under a half an hour to answer your questions. And again, give us a call. We'd love to answer your question. It gives us an opportunity not only help you, but probably help a lot of other people. That number, 800-859-0957. Let's go out to Dave in Brighton. Dave, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Hey, how you doing today?
Hey, we're doing great. Thanks for calling us.
Cool. I have got a Hewlett-Packard laptop.
Okay.
And a hard drive just froze up one night, so I've replaced it with a new solid-state drive.
Good.
But I've got about 860 gigs on one terabyte drive. I'd love to get off there, and I can't get the drive to spin up, and I was wondering if there's any tricks.
Any tricks? So I imagine you've already placed it in an external drive tray, and it's not being recognized, right?
I actually went out and got a USB cable that you can,
plug right into it. Yeah.
Yeah, plugged it in there, got a light on the cable, but the hard drive did nothing.
Yeah, usually when that happens, it's time for the. How can I say, there's a datarecoverygroup.com, but they usually charge you, a lot. Any other tricks? I mean, I've heard of people throwing it in a bag of rice, stick it in the freezer.
LUT is a relative term because it depends on, how important is that data on that drive?
Yeah.
It's it's movies and, you know.
Yeah, do you want to pay $4,000 for those movies?
Oh, gosh, no. I you know, there's yeah. ways.
Okay, then in that case, if you're not, if you don't really worry too much about losing what's on there because you can't get it off anyway, and you're not willing to pay the price to do it, you
for,
could...
For a professional to do it, there's other ways, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They'll take it in a clean room, disassemble it, put it all back together again, get it spinning, and pull the data off right. of it. But you can try this. You have to be careful. If it's not spinning, it's only one of two reasons. Either A, the heads are stuck to the platter, and so the platter can't move, or B, the motor for the drive itself is shot. If the motor's still good, but the heads are still stuck on the drive, I have taken a hard drive. You put a pillow on top of a tabletop, take the hard drive, and bang it down once or twice onto that pillow. And then try putting power to it. Say again?
That's the old Apple trick with the old, not the iPhones, but the old... you know, the music thing.
Oh, you're talking about for using for the old iPods?
Yeah, the
hard drives. Yeah.
You can try that. It might work for you. That's the only thing that I've had some success from in the past. Not always, but sometimes.
Yeah, there's a couple other things you can do also. If you were to place it on the metal side down and have some power given to it and give it a spin within the first 5 seconds that it turns on.
You mean a twist?
Yeah, like a little twist as if you were going to spin it around on the table on that low spot. You can also pick it up so that you're holding it more or less vertically the long way and tap it on the table. You figure everything on the drive is gone already, so you really can't do too much.
Yeah, and if you're really going to shoot the works, the other thing you can do is you can take the cover of the assembly off of the drive, take a cotton cloth or a cotton glove, put your finger on there, apply some power, and attempt to spin the actual platter itself and see if it'll spin up.
Yeah, and of course, of course, you're all assuming that it is and not spinning. One thing I've noticed as I've gotten older is sometimes I cannot hear. The drives are so small nowadays, you can't even hear
the motor's running.
The motor's running anymore. And, or my ears feeling.
You can kind of feel it, though.
Yeah, good
yeah,
point.
But if he picks it up, if he has that cable on the end of it, he picks it up and turns that drive left to right, upside down.
Oh, it's like
down,
a spinning top.
It's like a gyroscope. Yeah. You'll feel that movement going
good
on.
Good point,
in there.
Cal. Thank you.
So do you know if the motor's running? Can you feel that?
You know, I don't feel the motor running on it at all.
Yeah.
So I didn't know I was going to just open it up and see if I could give it a little bump or something, you know?
Yep.
But I've had people, don't do that. You'll 86 it, so.
It's nice to be the most fun.
I went home from work, and you guys were on, so I figured out what the heck, I'd give it a shot. You know?
You know, just for the fun of it, you might want to do this. And I've used these guys before. They're down in Southfield, and they're also across the country. But it's called Data Recovery Group.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a call and just ask them what an evaluation for that would go for.
Would it be
cheaper than you think it is.
Yeah, would they be able to take and just put a little motor back on?
They operate a clean room. They do complete recoveries.
Yeah.
So they can make an evaluation of the drive itself and tell them exactly what it might cost them to do.
Yeah, especially if he takes it in, it's already disassembled, he's just going to hand it to him. And
if he doesn't take it apart, just take it in just the way it is and say, here, guys, can you give me an idea what this might cost to recover this data on it? They have tools where they can check it, and then they can come back to you and say, okay, it's going to cost you, I don't know, $500 or $1,000, depending on whatever it's going to cost.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, what type of hard drive was it? Was it Hitachi?
It's a Toshiba.
Toshiba.
Yeah.
Yeah, Toshiba 1 terabyte.
Yeah.
Now, one good question I have that's actually an important question is, do you have an online backup or something now?
I do now once I gave a bunch of money to HP to get recovery set and put 8.1 back on it. And so now I got a cloud thing going, so it's starting to back things.
Good.
Okay, that's right, good. That's you pass.
Dave, try those things. Good luck with it. Hopefully one of them works. They might even be able to figure out how to put a new motor on.
Oh, yeah.
Might be able to.
You never know what they can do for you. I mean, it won't hurt you to ask.
Nope, not at all. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
we appreciate people like Dave calling us because it gives us an opportunity to talk to a lot of people that might have the same problem. Let's go out to Craig in Columbus. Craig, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Hey, I really missed you guys. It's been a couple of years since I called.
Oh, good. I'm glad you called this time. What can we do for you?
What I have is I downloaded Adobe because I had to run, I don't know what it was. It was a course I was taking. And now all of the formerly, I don't know what you call them, saved or whatever, but appear like a file on my desktop, and now they all read PDF with that Adobe symbol. What does that mean?
Those are PDF documents that you have on your desktop. Those are all PDFs that you may have created or courses that you took that were PDFs. And because you've loaded the Adobe application on it, it has associated that logo with those documents and taken the generic one away and replaced it with the Adobe one.
So he could open it up with the Adobe Reader.
Correct.
Have you tried one? Have you tried that, Craig?
Yeah, I just wonder why it changed all that without me doing anything.
Okay. Oh, I gotcha. Because there's probably an update to Adobe's logo between one version and the next. And so it probably looks a little different. I see where you're going.
And what it may have said, it may have given you an option, may not have. But if it did, it would have said something like, do you want anything that could be associated with the Adobe Reader to now be the Adobe Reader to be the default reader for that
the
file?
The default application for that particular type of file.
So that may have happened. And whether they gave you that option or just automatically did that for you. But at least you can get to them, right?
Yeah, I saw that. And my next question is, what does baud rate mean, B-A-U-D? What does that mean?
Well, I haven't heard that in a long time. Have anybody?
And you were just talking about AOL, weren't you?
We were just talking about AOL.
I left Shelby, and I'm in Columbus now. I'm working for a great employer. And some of the machines I'm working on, of course, technology changes. But I got rusty because I was doing other things. But what does baud, B-A-U-D, mean?
That was really just the speed of your data connection. We're well past baud right now, which... But we're in the megabits of baud rates at this point. But essentially, it's how fast the information moves over the internet.
Right, and it was typically for telephone networks, which very few people have dial-up. So it's typically a dial-up networking type of
back
speed.
When we had modems.
A measurement of speed on a dial-up network.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling us, Craig. Well, thank you for tuning in to the Internet Advisor Show. We have a few more minutes for your calls, and I would love to answer your question.
You've just been incredibly smooth this week. I'm telling you, I'm worried for Foster.
You know, I'll tell you what. It's been that week up north at the North Channel, chilled out. Actually, it was pretty warm up there, so not chilled out, but off the grid, I... couldn't answer email, couldn't send email, couldn't get on the telephone.
But you could have called us at 1-800-859-0957.
I couldn't even do that, like most people. So if anybody's up in the North Channel, they're not hearing us. I guess you could still get radio up there. But it was a wonderful time. I went up with my water polo buddies. This was like the 25th year, something like that. And just had a wonderful time.
Did you actually take your devices with you and then watched yourself fall off as each one of those each one of the bars fell off the grid?
You know, I did take them because every once in a while we would go into a marina with Wi-Fi, and then I could download, 400 and some emails that, and I didn't have time to answer them, so I turned the device back off.
I have to ask, do you actually play water polo? Because I usually call my old friends my old drinking buddies, and you call them your old water polo buddies. So you actually play water polo?
I played up until a few years ago.
Wow.
And because now I work in Troy, I can't go back. We play three times a week at noon, and I can't go to work in the morning and then go back to Ann Arbor at noon.
How do they get the horses to swim?
Yeah. that's always the problem. Yes. Always the problem.
Little water wings on the horses.
So, one of the guys that went, his daughters, he had twin daughters, and they played for U of M. On the women's water polo team, and they didn't lose. They haven't lost their 4 years in the Big Ten and went to the national championship tournament every year. And
wow.
So that was kind of fun. He's not as good a water player as his kids are. But.
You know, Ed, I'm going to bounce back to you because you, like I have kids who have just came out of college or still in college.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do more about this later on, about going back to school and that sort of thing. But when you prepped your kids to take them away to school, from a tech perspective, what did you normally do every year? Because I know you had like a routine you would do with them.
Yeah, usually I'd go to the bank, get a loan. No, oh, I'm sorry. What I would do is, no, I made an image, an exact image of all their computers and put it on a hard drive, and then I gave it to them, and with restoration DVD, you know, like a Windows 7 bootable flash drive, so they could, if they had to, recover their partition and reinstall their operating system. They would also use that same hard drive to back up data. So they had an icon on their desktop to back up. Using RoboCopy, which is embedded in Windows 7, the ability to copy all their data to their external hard drive. And then I had a backup image of their computer as well on a 2 terabyte drive, you know, in the fire safe at the house, just in case.
And that reduced your calls that you got from when they were away from school.
Yeah.
Dad,
yeah.
My computer's skunked.
You know, what I wish I would have done is put some sort of remote control software on there so they could remote into them. But both of them, I could usually give them verbal instructions over the thing. And Skype really helped. So they all had Skype, and I could Skype them, and then, you know, they could hold a mirror up to the Skype thing, and I could see what's going on the screen.
Yeah, that's a good segue, because what I used to do with my daughter, because she used the Mac, is built into the operating system is something called screen share, so I could just connect directly to her machine and actually be able to control it and fix those things.
Yeah, and there's websites also. There's join.me out there now that you can use, so we don't have to do the whole hold the camera up and look at things now. There's
TeamViewer is great.
I don't know. TeamViewer, when you can't download that anymore, because when you do, the site was taken over by someone else, and at least last time I tried downloading TeamViewer, it's nothing but nasty stuff. So I would not recommend TeamViewer anymore.
Okay, well, we'll
have if it's been a year or two since you've used it, don't use it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it still works fine, but...
Yeah, we still have an old downloaded version, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what exactly is TeamViewer again?
It allows you to remotely view, share desktops, and view documents. TeamView build. It is a team collaboration software package.
So, any other advice about how you would send your kids off to school and be prepared for, you know, what they're going to encounter with a university?
Give them their own printer. Because the schools will tell you that, yes, we have printing capability, but they're always broken, and the only ones that work are in the library, which is on the other side of the campus.
And kids never go to the library anyway.
Make sure you check your homeowner's insurance for any theft or breakage coverage that you could have on the computers that they're taking away as well.
What kind of computer should they take?
Well, this is a great question. My daughter, of course, was Windows only, but my son was on the border between a Mac and a PC. And I said, Talon, and I actually encouraged him to get a Mac. He's going, Dad, but the site says you could use either a Mac or a PC. I think I'm going to go with PC because that's what, you know, I get support from you.
Right.
Like, great, thanks. He got there. Within a week or two, he's like, oh, I should have got a Mac.
Really?
Because he's doing nothing but film and video editing and stuff like that. And it's just so much, you know, easier on the Mac.
So Bill and Cal are just smiling ear to ear comment.
And it really doesn't matter which one you do, but I will say this. Don't buy a machine that's too cheap, and don't buy one that's too expensive. If they're too cheap, they're not going to be rugged enough to put up the demands that come with a student slinging it around in a backpack. But then again, you don't want to spend a ton of money either and overspend as well.
And that's what happened with my kids. They both spent around $800 each, and they both got a Sony Vaio, which Sony does not make laptops anymore. So they bought $800 each, and I said, you could have bought three $300 computers almost for the price of that. And so when you broke the first one, you could have got another one. Right. And they both broke their first ones. I had to fix them.
Also, Surface tablets are a very good contender in that market, getting a Surface and a good keyboard for it.
That's what's sitting in front of me right now, right, is a Surface.
Mm-hmm. Now, they're up this, what, Surface 3?
Yep, and that's supposedly. Now, I have the Surface Pro 2,
mm-hmm.
and love it. So I can't wait. I need to go get the
$600 to $900 usually for a is that what it is?
Yeah, it's about that.
Yeah.
Depending on the size.
Make sure you budget for an external hard drive for backup. Make sure you budget for a really good case for it to go into to protect it as well.
Good point. You know, my son and daughter both decided to go with the backpack, and they actually spent the, I think, probably $55-$60 for a good backpack that was so insulated. Because, you know, the sides can be insulated well, but you can also cram too much stuff in there. So they intentionally got a backpack that you could not overpack. Because when you overpack and stick books in there, you'll actually crack the display.
Yeah,
and you want to get a backpack that's meant for a laptop that has a padded bottom.
Correct.
Because kids are going to be slinging that thing around, and it's going to be sitting on the ground. They're going to drop their laptop in there or their tablet, and it's going to damage it.
Those few extra bucks that you spend are going to be well worth it. You were going to say, Gary?
No, I was just going to say, both my kids now have an iPad, and my son, who's still in high school, their whole school is iPad-oriented. They don't charge. He goes to a private school, to Detroit Catholic Central, and they used to have a book fee. Well, they don't charge the book fee anymore, and they don't require the kids to have books. Everything is online on the iPad, and they've standardized that way. He doesn't use his computer very much at all, and with the new iPads, what we're hearing that are coming, it's going to be coming with keyboards, with USB drives. There could be a possibility that could start to look like a laptop replacement. What's your thoughts on that?
Is this a student rumor, or is this something you've heard professionally?
It's online.
Online. So you're thinking that the next version of the iPad, or a version coming up, may support external drives? That's unheard of.
So that's what we're hearing, because Surface is cutting into their market. So. Microsoft Surface.
Competition's good.
It is good. Hey, we've reached the end of this show. We really appreciate people listening to us. This is the Internet Advisor Show. You can get to us online all week long, internetadvisor.net. Listen to the podcast, so if you like what you've heard but you want to hear it more slowly, or stop it and follow some of the advice, go and just download our podcast from there or from iTunes. So with that, I'm going to say thank you, Ed Riddell. Thank you, Bill Carver. Thank you, Cal Carson.
Thank you.
And Foster Brown will be back next week and do this show much more smoothly than I did. But this is Gary Baker saying have a great weekend. Take care.